Chatting with the greatest minds in the Bitcoin space. This is a Cryptoeconomy Chat. What's up, guys? We have got a chat today. I went on with Brady from Citizen Bitcoin and the Swan Bitcoin team. They got a lot of great people together for a conversation, and we just had a whole lot of fun. I didn't even get to stay till the end just because I was busy. There's a lot of other things I had to do. But it was just an awesome conversation all about the coronavirus, the current state of the markets, how to assess and how we were thinking about the current situation in Bitcoin in the last couple of miserable days that have happened. So let's go ahead and just jump into this conversation. And I hope you guys enjoy it. Don't forget, huge thank you to Swan Bitcoin, which these guys actually put this on, but also a huge thank you just for them supporting this show and making this possible. Been a really busy day. And it was great to actually get to talk to Corey and Brady and all the whole crew. Jan was there as well. I think you guys are going to love this. This is a huge crew of some serious Bitcoiners. So let's go ahead and jump right in. This reminds me so much of, it's amazing. Like, these days come in Bitcoin, like every couple years, every 3 years, maybe, I guess, at the current rate. I remember the last time I felt like I was up at 3 o'clock in the morning watching hash rate, price charts, like just totally and utterly consumed in what was going on with Bitcoin was during the fork last time during 2017 and 17 in August. Mm-hmm. I remember I was out at, I wasn't even at my house. We were out with friends staying with them, and everybody had like hung out that night. I felt like it was like maybe like Halloween or something, but obviously it was in August, so I have no idea why we were there. But I woke up like, I'm like trying to sleep on the floor in the living room on like an air mattress, and like staring at my phone. And I get up and I'm like going to the kitchen and breaking out my wife's laptop and looking at mempool charts, and I'm like, what do I move? Like can I buy some? Like it was just crazy. And I remember thinking like I had. Part of me was just utterly panicked that, you know, how long will the price be low again? You know, like how long do we have to go through another doldrums of this? And then at the same time, it's just like, what an exciting thing to be a part of. You know, like this is, Bitcoin continues to make history. If there was an award for the most exciting investment, Bitcoin absolutely wins the Oscar, like hands down.
Oh yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah,
it's jacked. Kind of feels surreal to me because, everything that's currently happening, it like not even in the worst nightmares, like hypothetical scenarios, mm-hmm. like total meltdown of the financial system, global pandemic. You kind of don't expect that it's actually happening, and now it's actually happening in a way. So it's really weird. I feel like I'm gonna wake up any day now.
Dude, 2020, there's no going back. This year has been. We're not even through. Are we through the first quarter? What is it? March? We're not. We're not through the first quarter.
No,
this year has been insane. Yeah,
we got the halving coming up.
Oh, my God.
The presidential election. I'm pretty sure Trump has coronavirus.
I think that's what's. I think that's what's being not reported right now.
No shit, man. Oh man. The dude drinks like 30 Diet Cokes a day. He's like one of the most unhealthy people in the history of the world at this point in his life.
He's like prime target. Corona has been like sitting around waiting for him to make a stupid tweet to punish him for it.
Oh man.
Which took about 30 seconds.
I won't be surprised if we find out this is like a Russia manufactured virus or something crazy like that. Some crazy shit.
Corona is the Russia collusion.
Man. This is a big opportunity for Russia, honestly.
No, it is. It's a big opportunity for anybody who's been
China and Russia
political instability to take advantage of and make a hit. Like I talked about this in, was it with somebody? I don't remember who I was talking with, but we really talked about like how, like that's how, like, I think the pieces on this, you know, huge chessboard are going to be moved, is that you see all of this fragility, this weakness and pressure building up, and everybody who's been dissatisfied, everybody who's been sitting on the edge of the fence for, you know, 20 years, not seeing any opportunity to kind of flex, you know, flex their nuts or like push themselves into the environment, into the situation, are going to see all of these giants falling over, and they're going to make their move. You know,
yeah.
Like if they wanted any kind of a trade deal, if they wanted any kind of a border to change, if like all the things that need political unrest to actually make the move, it's going to happen. And everybody's going to be pulled in 1,000 different directions and have no idea where to land. Like the smoke is going to clear and, you know, half the cars in the race are going to be crashed up against the wall.
What's up, JV?
Yo, yo.
Yo, yo. We got you.
Hello, hello.
What's up?
Hey, buddy.
How's it going, man? We got Hass in here, too.
Hass, what's up, baby?
Hass, wait a second. Let me put that video on.
Long time to see.
Yeah, it has been.
This is right, awesome.
Let's go live. Here we go. It's in the process. The magic's happening.
How we doing, boys?
Not too bad.
Emotions.
through the ringer, man.
I've basically only slept 3 hours in the past 48.
Congratulations.
Even someone who's been around as long as me haven't seen something, this big in one day.
Yeah.
I've seen it happen over 3 days.
Gigi's image.
At least 3 or 4 times. Yes. Hello, yeah, brother Gigi.
Hey, Gigi, what's up, brother?
Hey, I brought Hodlon out as well.
Soon to be father Gigi.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Can you imagine bringing a child in this world, you know? Like, we're T+2, so... Any second now, I'll be a dad, and I'll have to explore this crazy time.
Well, you've got a story to tell your kid from now on. It's like you were born the day after the famous Friday the 13th massacre of the Bitcoin market.
Born Friday. Right at the inflection point.
Oh man, I didn't realize it was. Yeah, it's Friday the 13th. Too perfect.
Well, it's Saturday the 14th over here now. You guys are still.
Yeah, Hass, you had a test of a slight test of your faith there. I was, I'm glad that you were honest with us all on Twitter, though, because, you know, even the most convicted sometimes get a little frightened, you know?
What was the test of faith?
I thought I was going to flinch. So I said, you know, well, you said, what would you do at 3K?
Yeah.
I said, you know what? I'll probably flinch at 3K.
And then it happened.
But I don't consider... $3,999 3K. I consider 3K being $3,001, which is a dramatic drop from 4K.
Yeah,
I got to be honest. I was watching it last night, as I'm sure many of you were. And I mean, first of all, just the shock of the red candle just continuing its precipitous fall was, you know, crazy. But in terms of my feelings, like I mentioned this on Twitter yesterday, and I know this sounds stupid and maybe reckless or whatever, but I've already decided I'm going down with the ship because this is so important. So like these days, I mean, the biggest regret or negative emotion I feel is just that, like all of you, I'm sure, I don't have that much dry powder because I've been so bullish for so long. You know, that's my only regret. Like it does, such a big drawdown makes me think like, what's happening in the world, right? Like what's causing this? Are we turning a corner? Are we entering a new stage of the whole dynamic that's going on? But as far as just like my confidence approach, bullishness on Bitcoin. Only thing I was thinking is, fuck, I can't, you know, I can't take full advantage of this.
Yeah. So I was fortunate.
I've got a stacking like strategy. I've publicized it on Twitter. Are we live? This is good, so the audience can see this.
Yeah, we're live.
So break out the calculators. Got to do a little bit of algebra, all of this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But basically, let your daily stacking equal X, right? And okay, your weekly stacking budget be 10X. So you put in an X every day, no matter what the price,
mm-hmm,
and then you put X at 10% below market, X at 15% below market, and X at 20% below market, and wait.
Just wait.
And do that every week. Every week, set up your limits, and just wait. So I had maybe 60 orders that had been sitting for 5 months.
No, wow. Shit, 60 orders.
But oh, for me, God, that was all sunk cost because that was money that was budgeted and,
mm-hmm,
put aside ages ago.
It was already Bitcoin in your mind.
Just waiting because Bitcoin, as is Bitcoin, as in nature, everything goes back to the mean.
Yeah.
Today, we dramatically overshot several means.
So if you were waiting, for those drawdowns of those orders, what were you shaking about?
Because the 4-year average, so the 200-week moving average is $5,800. So when it dropped down to 6,000, like the Telegram group was fire. I'm like, it's got a bit more guys mining costs. And, mm-hmm, you know, the MA is around 5,800, 5,600.
Yeah.
And down she kept going. But to go like, so, and like, it's no wonder that after the big crash to 4,000, it bounced back pretty near up the 200 MA at 5,800. And, you know, now it's whipsawed down a little. But things will stay at the mean.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people yesterday were celebrating. They bought the dip at 7,000 and they'd gone hard, or at 6,000. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, you know, it dipped down to 4,000. And just from past experience, this always happens. So the trick is auto DCA. That's it. It crashed today. That's fine. Do you still believe in it, though? Do you still believe in it today like you believed in it yesterday?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's a question. Then that's not rhetorical.
But look, a lot of people that I speak to, especially newbies, and they're panicking. Because, look, psychologically, it's not easy to be down in such a big sum. You know, like some people, for example, today lost 25% of their net worth or 50% of their net worth or whatever it was. Like, it was you know, today was a pretty rough day. So you could see somebody that hasn't been around for six and a half years or whatever it is, you know, they could start thinking to themselves like, you know, maybe the world isn't ready for this. Maybe, you know, so-and-so this and, you know, the FOMO, sure, and the flood, sure, you know, and the demons, they start yakking.
They do, man.
Today, if you still believe today what you believed yesterday, then believe it tomorrow and just auto DCA.
Yeah.
Yeah. I stayed surprisingly calm during all of this. I think mainly because so many other crazy things are going on. As some of you might know, I'm very, very close to Italy and things are just on lockdown, crazy mode all the time. And
yeah.
I wholeheartedly agree with what Hass is saying. If you want to stay sane, just auto DCA. Don't look at the price. I stopped looking at the price probably like 2.5 years ago or something like that. I get my price signals from memes on Twitter.
That's
I noticed something's going on. And the only time I might see the price is at the bottom right corner in Wasabi. But, you know, you can kind of move that out of your mind as well.
Yeah. And
I think it's very important to just set up auto DCA and stay sane. And just, don't care about the price movements that much. I mean, sure, price is an integral part of Bitcoin and part of the security puzzle and everything else. I mean, it's not, you cannot say that price is not important at all. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, Bitcoin is still Bitcoin and nothing has changed in cyberspace. Like it's still producing blocks every 10 minutes and it's like, it's only in the financial space that we experiencing this tsunami. And of course in meat space, we have this virus and everyone panicking. Rightly so. I mean, I think it's one of the biggest pandemics that we've seen so far. And it's a crazy, crazy time, but nothing happened in cyberspace. You know, Bitcoin is still marching on and as strong as ever.
Yeah. TikTok next block.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I find it, I'm almost envious of people that are going to be entering the space over the next 12 months because like we have probably made all of the mistakes. Like everyone in this chat right now, we've got like the battle scars from being in the space for 3, 4, 5, 6 years. And like we've made all the mistakes, lost money, went through the emotional roller coasters, all of it. And if someone that enters today will just take the advice and say, look, get educated. And as a result of doing that, develop your conviction, understand what this is, understand what it could be, and just auto DCA and don't make it a big, you know, part of your life. It's just running in the background. You have that, you know, you're accumulating, you have that kind of Zen perspective, and it doesn't have to be this crazy thing that you're, you know, you're obsessed with all the time. It's just, it's your bet on the future and let it happen. And whatever it does, you don't need to worry too much about it. I'm like, damn, fuck. Like, I kind of wish that was my approach from the beginning, but I made all the silly mistakes, you know, from, well, that I'm sure many of us made in earlier times.
Yeah,
there's a lot more to be obsessed about, right? Like a lot more to be obsessed about. That's not just the price. Once you move past the price obsession, then you can just get like obsessed by all the intellectual stimulation that Bitcoin's about to drop on your ass.
Totally. I'm not even sure if it's gonna be easier for the people that are entering now, because I think Bitcoin still has the potential to moon so insanely hard that I think it will also be very, very hard to just stay calm and all the DCA once Bitcoin really takes off.
True.
Once we are going to start hitting a new all-time high. I mean, you know, I think nobody can really tell what's going to happen in the near term, in the next couple of weeks or a couple of months. But I think on the longer time horizon, it's kind of obvious that the fiat currencies are going to depreciate in Bitcoin terms. And I think we all know that and we all believe that to a degree of virtual certainty. And I think, I mean, I, as crazy as it might sound, I tend to agree with Bitcoin Tina's assessment. And I think all surprises in Bitcoin will continue to be on the upside. I think it will just shoot to crazy highs. And I think if you're new to the space, you won't understand why and you won't be able to stay calm.
Yeah,
quite possibly. Yeah,
I'm not sure. Like, I'm kind of a naturally excited person. So this every time the price does something like this, I feel like I'm on a roller coaster, and like I legitimately just go through. Oh, what's up, Corey? Corey, just jump in.
Yeah, he'll be back.
I'm literally all over the place, and I was just telling Brady and Gigi before y'all jumped on. Basically my yesterday was like, I went from panicked to like exuberant to like really, really panicked to just so like jacked. Like I was about, like somebody was pushing me into the UFC ring. Like I was all over the place yesterday. And my problem is that, like with DC, I mean, Swan Bitcoin isn't released yet, so I haven't had an auto DCA method.
You haven't experienced Bitcoin Zen yet. That's the problem.
Jan is not here because he's busting arse, getting nice. That in your hands, man. It's gonna be good. Soon.
That's where he should be. But yeah. So, and I'm so overexposed to Bitcoin that as soon as I got past my like deep panic that like this was such a huge crash that I literally was worried that something had happened that I just wasn't aware of. And again, like my immediate thought was, it was not any of the frivolous stuff or like, oh, you know, speculators are dumping. I literally went hunting for about a good 30 or 40 minutes for, did SHA-256 get broken? like I searched quantum computing in Google and sorted by relevant, like sorted by date. And I was just like, what was causing this? And then when I basically came to the conclusion that, you know, TikTok next block, like none of that had changed. Like mm-hmm. monetary policy is the same, nothing. Like all that panic kind of went away. And I was like, this shit's on sale. And I went desperately hunting for fiat anywhere. And
turning up the couch cushions, looking for quarters.
Literally, I'm not even kidding. And CK interrupted me in the middle of last night to come on POV Crypto. And I literally had to stop. All my dogs were looking at me like I was crazy because I ripped our filing cabinet to pieces just with a big stack of papers in the living room. And I found a retirement account that we didn't know we had because we had elected at the beginning of my wife's job to not put anything into it so that we would just immediately, like we would have savings to put into Bitcoin because that was our retirement. I'm not going to retire on stonks. And we found an account that even though we hadn't been putting into it, it actually part of her compensation is a profit share with the company. So there's at this price is well over one whole Bitcoin in that account.
Nice.
And we had no idea. We found it last night and we're like, oh shit. So now we're trying to figure out like, you know, just basically rip it all out. And if I can, depending on how much time it takes to empty that account, I may come out with a much larger net worth because my net worth is in Bitcoin, and I will have more at the end of this. So that will make me very happy if that goes.
Your dogs were probably looking at you funny because you were looking at them funny, and they were just like, "Bro, I know that look. Don't you sell me? Don't you sell me? It's not worth. It's not
how
worth
much."
What's up, Corey? Welcome to the the madness here.
Man, it's good to see you guys. I was
hey, Corey.
What's up, everybody? I was running over just getting the download from Carvalho on his new madness, creating mm-hmm. a circular Bitcoin economy. Mm-hmm. Love that dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's awesome.
I asked him to join, but he had another call right after because he's starting a new company. So guy's busy.
Yeah. Oh, it's exciting.
That is exciting.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was fun yesterday. HODL, don't trade, guys. It was my contribution was like, you know, I have a lot of trader friends, and I went to bed kind of like really depressed that basically what stopped Bitcoin from going to zero was BitMEX lying to their customers and saying that, you know, there was a hardware failure with their cloud provider, which sounds...
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, basically just like cascading liquidations, and they were slowing them down as much as possible. There was just no one hitting the bid on, mm-hmm. on BitMEX last night. And they were, you know, $500 below every other exchange, and literally was like 25 mil to zero on the order book. And it was literally just going to track down to zero. And they just, you know, they probably just fake something and said there was a hardware outage and pulled the plug on it. Bybit pulled the plug as well. And that's what basically let it bounce up from, you know, 3,500 back up to 5K and give some semblance of normalcy to it. And then this morning, just thinking about it, like that was so depressing. And I was like, oh God, really, like these, you know, totally unregulated 100X, you know, leverage exchanges almost took Bitcoin down to zero last night. Then I was thinking like, well, actually, in a weird way, you know, Bitcoin's incentives kind of worked because someone running a casino wants the chips to be worth $10,000, not a dollar.
True.
You know, so in that respect, you know, Arthur Hayes' incentives were to pull the plug and get, you know, keep the thing off the floor. You know, not the way I would have liked this whole thing to go down, but you know, we're sitting here above 5K, and you know, 10 years ago it was under a dollar.
Yeah, look,
respective.
I'm happy. Mm-hmm. I'm happy. The people on BitMEX lost their shorts.
of course, you are. Huh?
Look at that face. Look at that.
Because I'm here for a new system. Like I signed up for the new shit. Why are we replicating the old shit?
Amen.
But we replicated the old shit, and as you saw, it almost went to zero. So if people can just curb their 100x desires and get away, you know, to the scarce, non-inflationary, non-debt-based natural way, maybe we could have a little bit more credibility. But for now, it's basically a Wild West version of the legacy system.
I don't think that you're ever going to get away from the financialization of this asset. It's going to happen regardless, because humans do that, because it's their incentives to do so. So you have to build something that is like anti-fragile or at least robust.
Well, that's it, right?
Those actions.
They can do whatever they want to. The beauty of Bitcoin is that even if it's treated that way, it's not going to destroy it. It will cause these sort of stress tests like we saw yesterday, but it won't destroy it. And that's
right.
That's the beauty of it. Because the whole system, the legacy system, can be taken down by this kind of shit. And we may be moving into a period where we see that, you know?
Yeah.
So
does the cat talk? Is Gigi actually there?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm here.
Okay, good. All right.
It's just, you know, I didn't get the mouth to move. That's the only thing that's missing.
I have a technical question real quick, guys. Can you all see all screens, or do you only see the person who's talking?
I can see all screens.
You got to go gallery view is what you want.
Got it. Beautiful. Yeah.
Yep. All right. Yeah. So Gigi, what's going on, man? you're saying you're in Italy, right? Or not in Italy. You're very near Italy. So what's the situation there, man? Are you guys sort of hunkered down?
Yeah, I have many friends in Italy, and especially in the northern part of Italy, where the outbreak started, so to speak. And I'm in Austria, as some people know currently, and it's it's starting to happen in Austria, the same thing that happened in Italy a couple of days ago. And so we're kind of applying the same measures, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see lockdowns as well. I think starting tomorrow, all shops will be closed. All holiday resorts and all ski resorts and everything else got closed down as well. And the only thing that will be open for commerce will be pharmacies and grocery shops. And yeah, drastic measures, but I think we kind of need to overreact to keep the health system going. And luckily in Austria, and also in Italy, to be honest, we have a very good health system, and also in Germany. And I think we're able to weather the storm, but I'm very worried about other countries. And I'm also worried because I think so many people don't take flattening the curve seriously, and I think a lot of systems will be overwhelmed, starting with the healthcare system, and it might have cascading effects. I mean, we will see cascading effects in economy for sure. All of you guys know that, and I think that will be more tragic almost than the health effects. But this will take a couple of weeks to play out. What I find interesting and fascinating is how quickly public opinion changed and flipped, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like some of the Bitcoiners, they were sounding the alarm like starting almost 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. And many people that kind of understand exponentials and how these things tend to grow, they saw it coming and they were sounding the alarm, and nobody took them seriously. Everyone was like, you're insane, and mm-hmm. why are you inciting panic, and why are you prepping like crazy and stuff like that. And now suddenly everyone is kind of panicked and on board and prepping, and a coronavirus expert, and it's weird how quickly this happened. So in my opinion, it's kind of an applied exercise in exponential growth as well. So that's why I think it's insanely interesting to watch all that.
I'm going to show you guys this is the toilet paper and paper towels aisle at Ralph's in Calabasas last night around 11:30 p.m.
Can someone
people talking about the toilet paper thing?
Yeah, can someone explain it to me? Why in the US everyone is buying toilet paper? Because in Europe it's not the case.
But we don't have bidets.
Coronavirus causes diarrhea.
Yeah. Yeah, we bidets didn't make it over here to the new world yet.
neither did fiber. It sounds like.
True. Well, there's that.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a crazy time with the confluence of things. Like, the Bitcoin drop yesterday, I mean, I don't want to sound like a dick, but like, I'm not fazed by it at all. It's just what Bitcoin does. And yes, it, you know, it's, it can be an emotional roller coaster, but my faith wasn't tested, let's say. But I do think, you know, with everything that's going on in the past week, obviously there's so many indicators that we're turning a corner. And, you know, the scenario that we've all been talking about for the last several years, basically since 08, seems to be coming to fruition now, with obviously the virus as a catalyst. And you kind of enter in this period where you just think like all bets are off now, like whether it's the virus or whether it's the money printing or whether it's the economic slowdown as a result of, you know, like it feels like we're at the beginning of this crazy period. This is just the kind of the kickoff party. Bitcoin's crash yesterday and the stock market crashes this past week. So it's definitely uncertain times and uncharted territory. And, you know, hopefully everyone's just been preparing as we've been talking about this over the last decade. Hopefully people have been, at least to some degree, making plans and preparations for, you know, contingencies that may or may not come to pass, but giving people, allowing yourself to have some degree of peace of mind as a result of having put things in place that at least will mitigate your personal and your family's downside to, you know, the uncertainty that's coming.
All right, let's take a quick break right here, and then we will jump back in.
I think we actually have an advantage with Bitcoin. Like, because of Bitcoin's volatility and the level of the rebound and the amount of volume that moved yesterday, like, you know, the markets are going to bleed for a long time. Like, the legacy markets are going to be hurting. It looks like we found our bottom in 24 hours.
And stay humble.
knock on wood.
Be careful.
Bitcoin tends to go through these things in like really, really sharp shocks and then get boring for a little while. And I think if we come out of this with Bitcoin being boring again for a short span of time, it will be everybody, the confidence in it will be like, why is this thing still here? When everything else is just in turmoil, and you have so many people, like there is a hard floor in the people who, just like we kind of detailed, none of us are really that shook. It was a rough day, but if I'm not mistaken, like there's a huge swath of people that were just buying everywhere. I know I was part of that.
The exchanges were reporting. Yeah, the exchanges, at least in Canada, Bull Bitcoin and ShakePay, they were all saying like, tons of signups were slow, you know, tons of buying activity. So
yeah,
that's
I'm very curious. I'm very curious what the level of confidence in the legacy markets are. Like how many people were looking at those red candles going, buy, buy, buy. And I don't know, I see an advantage if, you know, Bitcoin kind of got its serious blood out of the way quickly. And now everybody else gets to see it, see the conviction behind it, because there's real confidence. There's the whole legacy markets is fluff, on top of promises, on top of liabilities. You know, it's just, it's all a confidence game. And that's why, like, you know, Tom Hanks get the coronavirus, and that's what takes the last, you know, takes the next 10% out. Like, everybody's aware that I think there's this general sentiment that there's nothing real underlying this thing. I mean, there's not even been any good earnings reports for years. All the stocks have just gone back up or have been going up on buybacks. And if all that confidence is gone, that trust is going to get destroyed, and it's not going to just come back because the price recovered for a little while. Because they, you know, dumped $2 trillion into it this week to prop it up.
So, yeah, so what is going on? Like, what's the central bank doing? What's the Fed doing? I haven't really checked out the news today. What is the response from the government?
I haven't confirmed, but from conversations and, you know, the crew dropping things that they have seen or heard, is that there's all kinds of stuff on the table right now. Forgiving debts in, you know, certain places. Apparently there was mention of having emergency tax, like refund stuff. The Fed has announced a $1.5 trillion injection into the repo market, and $500 billion of it, I think, went yesterday, and there was like a green candle for like 20 minutes, and then it was gone. And I have also heard, but have not confirmed, that they actually plan on doing $1 trillion a week until the end of April.
We're
talking about $5 trillion at the end of this? $6 trillion?
Isn't U.S. debt still hovering around 20, 25 trillion? Something like that?
That number is not accurate. It's okay, yeah. Though. But okay. Yeah, we should probably not give the numbers unless we actually know them. But yeah, what we do know is the $1.5 trillion sticker on the repo market activities. Mm-hmm. One today of $500 billion for a three-month facility. One tomorrow for three-month facility for another $500 billion. And then also a one-month facility tomorrow for $500 billion.
Have you heard anything about the $1 trillion a week?
No, okay. That's not going to happen. What I did hear, I think it was like $60 billion a month of actual QE, which is expansion of the Fed balance sheet, mm-hmm. Which would, you know, not sure how long that was going to run for. But what's 60 billion times 12? That's $720 billion. Yeah, so something like that. If you were in that for like 12 to 18 months, and the market was confident in that. You know, you're basically talking about expanding the Fed balance sheet from like $4 trillion to $5 trillion over 14 to 16 months, something like that. I think that's what is being floated. And I think that's actually what they already signed up for. Probably still has to be kind of approved by somebody, but that's what they announced was $60 billion a month of buying bonds basically from, you know, out of the market. It's worrisome. I think, you know, the market being up today is just like, you know, obviously it was a huge sell-off yesterday, so it was bound to bounce back a little bit. Could be dead cat bounce, could be the forming of a V, but probably it's just enough signals out of the White House and out of, you know, probably like Pelosi and friends, that at some point, probably early next week, they'll actually have to get on stage together. And this is what, mm-hmm. you know, Kyle Bass was talking about with Parker Lewis on Marty Bent's show. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, that they'll probably have to come out and present a united front and say, we're all in this together. We're America. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And just announce helicopter money to somebody.
Yeah.
Probably rich people.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. So for today, the sting I felt today was a non-Bitcoin sting.
Hmm.
So for example, like, Gigi knows I was planning to go leave the fiat world next June. Still will still happen now, but in a twist of fate, probably not on my terms. Everyone's gone broke in Australia. I build houses for a living. No one's buying houses. And just knock-on effects throughout the whole economy. So if Australia closes down for 2 weeks, so... people aren't going to have jobs to stack sats. So I think like everyone's going to be in for a rough ride. Probably not to the point where we're all selling apples, but this is probably going to be more like the Great Depression than the Great Recession, in my opinion. I think this could be like the big, like, unwinding. So all of these trillions were announced and, you know, didn't instill any confidence in the market. Market just kept going down and down. So obviously I'm not an expert in markets and whatnot, but on the ground, people are starting to worry about their jobs.
Yeah.
From people 100%. That weren't even thinking about it 3 weeks ago, now people have started to think about their jobs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it almost seems like, and you know, Bitcoin's bounce back, whether it's sustained or whether we're in a longer lull and it goes further, you know, every time this happens, Bitcoin's anti-fragility is on display. for those of us who, you know, kind of really see what's going on. Whereas the exact opposite thing seems to be happening in the legacy system, right? You put, we're in the numbers of the trillions now, and that much capital or liquidity is injected into the markets and not much of an effect. And so the fragility of the legacy system is seemingly more and more apparent. And so you've got, you know, and I don't know when the narratives will become mainstream obvious. I think we're a little bit ways away from that for Bitcoin. You know, yesterday I got a bunch of messages from friends like, how's that safe haven and this and that. But I also got some messages from friends that were sending me, you know, the Wall Street Journal article, 1.5 trillion repo operation and all this kind of stuff. So, and this is highly unusual for these sort of friends. Like, they're in different domains and they don't usually consider these things, but the numbers are getting so big and the problem's so apparent that these are becoming, you know, more top of mind for a lot of people. And I agree with Haas. I mean, I don't know where this is going to go, but for so long we've looked at things and said, how is this sustainable? How is this still functioning in this way? And, you know, we've always talked about that pain. And I think you're right. I think there's going to be a lot of knock-on economic effects. There's going to be a lot of bankruptcies, a lot of bailouts, that kind of stuff. And I don't know how far
out there. A lot of the mom and dads, like
they'll just have hard times.
Like, yeah. I'm okay if I lose my job because I wanted to leave anyway. But there's a lot of people losing their job is going to be a disaster. Me, I can't. Uh-huh. I'm looking forward to the day of leaving the fiat world next June. But a lot of people, this is ruining. Like, if we, you know, if they make us sit at home for 2 weeks, Australia has like 3 million casual staff. That's two right. weeks, no pay.
Yeah.
Like, these people have to pay rent. So
yeah,
like,
it's surreal. It's somewhat surreal, market, for sure.
I think people just don't give a shit about the bankers and what's happening with their shares, because they don't have shares anyway.
Yeah.
So it's going to be very, very interesting to see just what happens on the ground versus what's happening, you know, on Wall Street.
What's your sense, Corey? How do you think this plays out? Is this the beginning of the big everything bubble popping?
I mean, you know, I'm always just about like protect your downside and be robust to things like that. So, you know, I think it definitely could be. I don't know if it's, you know, I guess if I had to put a number on it, I think we'll see 15,000 in the Dow, which is kind of the headline number here in the States, you know? So that's another 33% down from here or something, and would be almost 50% down from the peak. And I think that's without anything else going horribly wrong.
Yeah.
You know, so
that's the good number.
Yeah, that's the good number, you know? And so I don't know. I mean, I don't care as much about the financial markets because it affects so few people as I do about sort of like the, we're still in this phase right now where certain people in certain communities in certain states in the US don't have their S together to the point where they're going to be able to flatten out that curve enough to have the capacity in the hospital system. That said, I think because we, you know, because the world runs on a dollar system and everybody's short dollars, like, we can just print money and pay for it. And a lot of people want to do favors for the big guy. So you'll see people just kind of coming out of the woodwork. And, you know, I saw Jack Ma sending like a million masks and 500,000 testing kits. You know, I think you'll see a lot more of that. And, you know, Roche out of Germany will do whatever they have to get as many of these high speed testing kits over to the US as possible. So, you know, that's capital attracts capital, and, you know, the US attracts help. The global system doesn't want the US to go down. And so I think, you know, we're kind of raising our hand now and saying like, yeah, we don't quite have our shit together. And it does seem like the world will rally to the cause and, you know, kind of save our asses. And that's probably just because the world runs on the dollar.
What's up, Jan? Welcome.
Hi, yo, how's it going?
We heard you've been busy in the lab.
Oh, man, it's been fun. My kids got pulled out of, well, I pulled my kids out of school a little bit prematurely because our schools are closing officially on Monday. But I have, you know, young children are even more exposed because they're just running around and touching everything and putting everything in their mouth. So yeah. I decided to take them out today. And actually, my parents just picked them up. So that's why I'm here.
Nice. Yeah. So how are you feeling, man? What's been your experience over the past 48 hours?
Rapid awakening amongst a lot of people in my social circles who are, some of them are still like, this is no big deal. While I probably knew about it longer than I've been talking about it and didn't really act. My dad is way more prepared than I am. Like he's been like he was one of the first, you know, to hit the stores just a few weeks ago. And now, you know, it's like exponential, right? Because at first it's, okay, only people at Costco, they're crazy Costco people. They're buying up all the toilet paper. No, nobody at Whole Foods or Trader Joe's or any of our kind of like more high class, quote unquote, establishments is panicking. So there's nothing to worry about. And then all of a sudden, 2 days ago, okay, Trader Joe's is out of pasta. You know, one day ago, there's lines everywhere. So we are seeing a rapid, you know, gradually then suddenly, right? Like we all know that's how exponential curves work. We all know that it's very hard to actually see it in practice. And then when you're actually going to the store and you start seeing the behavior of everybody else around you, you start realizing it's happening. And the very quick, you know, deterioration of there's nothing to worry about. There's five cases in the state to, okay, let's shut down all public events to let's shut down schools. Like just it's day after day, the shutdowns are becoming more real. So yeah, I mean, I'm glad that we were, you know, we're always stockpiled with food because my wife loves to stockpile. So we didn't have to do much. you know, she definitely thought I was a little crazy 2 weeks ago trying to tell her, hey, let's just make sure we have a little bit of extra everything. Mm-hmm. And now I don't seem so crazy anymore.
Yeah. It's a lesson in exponentials, as Gigi was saying earlier, but both the spread of the virus and the spread of the panic and prepping and all that. Corey, yeah,
Did you guys hear about the Brazilian president who contracted the virus?
Yeah, Bolsonaro has been tested positive for the virus, yep.
Yeah, and Canadian Prime Minister's wife as well.
Oh, yeah.
Trump, and I guess...
But the dude has it. He's got it. popping Sudafeds. He's just popping Sudafeds right now and trying to keep it together. But
dude, he'll never admit it. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is with politicians, celebrities, right? They're always out and about in large gatherings. They're shaking hands. I mean, they're really very exposed. So yeah.
I've been really kind of fascinated with the response, particularly with like essentially the government doing almost nothing. It seems like that they're kind of finally catching up, but the number of like places that I go to, like my wife's work, my sister's work, all making pretty extensive changes in preparations for this. This will be my wife's last day in the office. They're going full remote. So apparently yeah, a lot of the sister's company is too. Like all the local grocery stores, like Harris Teeter and stuff, they immediately said they're going to like discontinue all the sampling. They've got people walking around disinfecting the carts, like actively. The cleaning staff is actually at the business that my wife is at right now is working during the day, just going around. Like they're now cleaning like four times a day, whereas they just do it at night typically. I mean, it was just like as I started kind of like compiling a list because I've heard like 30 things like that over the couple of days.
Everybody's
just like, all right, we got hand sanitizer right here now. Like, please no shaking hands in this area, like sort of thing. So
yeah, everybody's going remote. Crazy. That's what I see in all my chats is all the companies are, you know, if there are tech companies, they're going remote because it's easy for them.
Yeah,
if they're not tech companies, they're coming up with all kinds of crazy last minute ways to go remote because, you know, it's not native to them. Which is a really interesting shift in our society very rapidly overnight. And everybody's forced to learn this new way of working. And it's going to, I mean, you know, it may be a big productivity hit in the short term, but it also may be a big productivity boost in the long term as people do learn to work better remote and see what they can accomplish, you know, when they're not distracted all day with other people in the office.
Let's go down that rabbit hole for a minute. I'm super interested in it. You know, our author was the author for 37 Signals all those years. And, you know, they wrote the book Remote and I just reread it again for the first time in 7 years and used to be good friends with Dave Hennemeyer Hansen back in the Chicago days. Obviously we're a remote company with Swan. What I love about it and this, they hit this point hard. It's actually a lot like Bitcoin it's a lot like creating this global protocol that you can, you know, sort of mix and match the best people for the job on top of that remote work protocol. Like, why should we have to find, you know, some UX guy that happens to be in LA and can make it to the office in Santa Monica or something like that if the best guy for the job lives in a small town outside of Frankfurt, you know? Like, yeah. You can just search for this global talent pool and find people in your tribe. Like, you know how important it is for us to find people in every role that actually speak Bitcoin and give a shit. And, you know, those people are not necessarily going to live in one location.
Yeah,
that's
got to
be true for everything.
For me, that Bitcoin has been a big force. Like, look at this, what we're doing here. We're all over the world right now. And I never did this prior to Bitcoin. I mean, I grew up on IRC, so I guess I did spend a lot of time chatting with people from all over the world. But it wasn't like a native, you know, piece, kind of part of my existence until Bitcoin, where you are really just in this global community. Because around me locally, there aren't that many Bitcoiners. Even in my group of friends, it's hard to convince people and all that, as you know, that's our job, right? But it's great to have this. It's great to be at a point where technology is good enough where it's easy to do remote stuff. So we're going to see more of it.
Makes me think of how well attended these VR meetups are right out of the gate. And, you know, I spent a lot of time doing the VR thing like 3-4 years ago, and they were just very sparsely attended gatherings. You might get like 20 people to show up for like a stand-up comedy set or something like that. And these VR meetups have already like 100-something people. I wonder if Bitcoin is like the best motivator for technology since porn.
It's weird because VR has been a thing for really like over 20 years. I actually remember getting a book on VR when I was a kid in high school in like the 90s. I got a book about like VR programming and like all this. And, you know, it failed to take off so many times. It was, the technology is not, I mean, it's not really advanced that much. Sure, we have headsets. But, you know, we had clumsy ways of doing that for like 20 years. And it's just not been, the critical mass hasn't been there for the adoption, I think. So it's interesting to see if this is the actual time that it takes because of all this that's going on with Bitcoin, with Corona, and all these other, you know, forces coming together that might actually create the impetus for people to really get on board with this stuff.
Yeah, you ban events of 1,000, gatherings of 1,000 or more, 500 or more, then yeah, the only other option if you want to actually get together, I guess, is, I mean, you know, obviously we can meet together in a big Zoom meeting or something, but it's a lot more real in VR. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah. There's a lot of, I think, changes that will come from this just from so much of the barrier to change is just in that initial hump of like, all right, let's just sit down and do it. Like, let's just try this thing.
It's routine, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's routine. It's like not having to change my workflow of my day, of what I'm used to, what I'm interacting with. And this is one of those things that, like, for pressures that are building all over the place, I'm deeply curious to see what happens to education coming out of this. If people are going home and learning online, like the higher education, like whole universities are apparently announcing evacuations. They're just sending everybody home, and then courses are going to be online. And I'm like after they do that for a couple of weeks, why would they go back when they're paying 100x the cost to be there when they could pay 1/100th of it and just go to a different website? And learn the exact same thing. Like, I'm very curious how many people will go. It's just like a micro example of it. It was when I finally got into podcasting. It was like this foreign thing to me. And then one day I just opened up the podcasting app because I didn't have something, I didn't have some other thing to consume my time with. And then found one thing that I liked. And after that, it was just like, why would anybody do anything other than podcast? Listen to podcasts. You know, like, I was just drowned in podcasts, and I was like, there's this massive industry that I'm just not aware of. And I feel like that's kind of a microcosm of what we could see with a huge swath of people in education, a huge swath of people in work, like just like you say, remote work. And the number of things that can be impacted by that, where people realize the potential, the larger set of options, the faster, the freedom of mobility, and all of those things, they'll just wonder, why would I go back? Why don't I just keep looking for these options? And the employers will have to adjust to make those options available to them. Yeah, I think this is where all the work is.
My wife's actually a high school teacher, so this is going to be a very interesting situation for them. What's happening now, today is their last day of school. On Monday, the teachers are coming in, the students are not, and the teachers are going to learn how to remote teach. So they're going to that, and they're off from school like on an early spring break for 2 weeks, and then 2 weeks from now, they're supposed to start remote classes. So all of these teachers who have never done remote teaching before are going to start remote teaching high school. And my wife is a science teacher, so she does labs and stuff like that. So this is going to be very interesting as to how they're going to pull off that and how they're going to change their educational system to support remote teaching, because it's totally foreign. And of course, there's a vibrant remote learning community, and there's a bunch of apps and stuff like that. But a lot of them are lecture style. You watch something, you do something. How do you actually get people to do things like labs, experiments, interactive things? Because honestly, modern school isn't as, it's not like when we used to go to school and there was a lot of just like regurgitation. Now there's a lot of back and forth. There's a lot of inquiry. There's a lot of hands-on experiments and stuff like that. So we'll have to see how that gets translated to the online experience. It'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Gigi, I heard you trying to chime in.
Yeah. I think it. What we have to think about is also that it will always be different. It's just like working remotely. It's just different than working in an office. Some things are way more effective if you just bring two or three people together and discuss something very quickly. And other things are way more effective if done remotely. And if you have a new pitch or a new idea, for example, write it out, think it through, and pitch it remotely as well. And I think the same we are seeing right now also with having Zoom meetings and having VR meetings, for example. In VR, I attended the last three and I helped Udi a little bit with the organization. And it's just absolutely fascinating how organically VR meetings evolve, because it's not like in a Zoom call where everyone can hear everyone. Like small groups will form organically and you will discuss prepping on the one end of the island and you will discuss stacking sets on the other side of the island, and some people will just do goofy shit and run around and drive a boat or something.
That's awesome. You know, so you only hear the people that are like in your physical vicinity?
Yeah, exactly. And it's also, cool. It's also like if you have an actual VR setup, because you can also join just by having a PC, but if you have actual an actual VR set, then it's very effective to have small movements in the hands, for example, when you explain something. And we had a VR lecture, for example, and Waxwing talked about coin joints, and he was actually standing in front of the class in a virtual classroom, and he had a presentation like with a beamer and a laser pointer and everything.
Wow.
And he had a virtual microphone he had to talk into so that everyone could hear him.
Okay, yeah. Goofy. I need to go get an Oculus right now.
It's
awesome. So
I'm still behind on that.
We all need one.
And you know, there are Quest so many benefits. There are just so many benefits. Like there are benefits to working in an office as well, but there are benefits with having a remote team as well. For example, I mean, people can work 24/7 all the time. And if you have people all around the globe, you could have a testing team in Australia and have the development team in Europe, or you can have two teams and you can just, you know, rotate nightly builds and test them all the time. So there are so many benefits that you don't have in a normal office. And I think with VR, it's the same thing. You know, there are some people that don't go to conferences because they want to stay anonymous and they are, they care about their OPSEC, and maybe they're introverts and they don't want to fly around and expose themselves to weird viruses, for example. I mean, that's the big joke right now. And there are so many benefits. And what I'm trying to say is it's just different. It's different. It's not necessarily better or worse. It's just very different. And I think we will see the same thing with homeschooling and teaching remotely. It's very different. And there are a lot of benefits. If you are self-motivated, you can learn at your own pace and you can learn way quicker and can reach a way higher ceiling than if you just go to school. But if you're not very self-motivated, then school, I think, is way better for you than staying at home, trying to learn on your own with online resources, because you just won't get anything done. So I think, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's tough with small kids. I have some small kids and, you know, I'm working also, or trying to work while also trying to take care of them, and being creative with how to give them activities that are both educational, but also so that I'm not having to be involved. Been a big fan of Osmo. For those of you who have kids, I highly recommend it. It's awesome. It's like an iPad attachment you put on, and it actually lets them do stuff with their hands, and then the iPad watches what they're doing and they give them feedback. So they're doing like math and reading and learning to code even. There's like a game where they get to, you know, show a character what kind of steps to take, and they're doing all that with their hands, and then the iPad's like giving them feedback, showing them how the character's moving around. It's been awesome, and you know, they can entertain themselves for an hour on that thing, get some amount of knowledge. I get a little bit of work done, so I've really enjoyed that. I'm hoping there'll be more products like that coming soon that will help kids engage.
So Corey, question for you. How are you feeling about starting up a business in this environment?
Well, I mean, you really couldn't time it any better. I mean, if you think about it, right? Like starting from such a low cost basis, when we show charts of people that start stacking on March 25th, and you look back, you know, 6 months from that, a year after that, something like that, it's going to look really good. I think it's going to help recruit a lot of people. You know, from like a competitive standpoint, you know, Bitcoin going in the tank and looking shaky as it did yesterday is going to stop a bunch of, you know, VC funding for competitors from happening. And, you know, we're already out of the gate. So, you know, in that respect, it's a great thing for us actually. You know, it definitely got us thinking a little bit more conservatively around some of the big splashier things that might have cost money on the marketing side, and thinking more about, okay, maybe Jan can just write that instead of paying somebody else to write that, or maybe Brady can just do everything and we don't hire a bunch more people. But
Brady's to-do list just
got it just got super huge. It's all Brady basically. But you know, I mean, we're excited to go live with that.
Oh yeah, you
know, I'm excited to roll out something that just works and is super simple and is, you know, way undercuts the fees of anybody else in the U.S. for, you know, the three step that you need, like automatic withdrawal from the bank account, automatic purchase of the Bitcoin, and automatic withdrawal to your personal storage. Set it and forget it and just keep stacking. So, you know, we probably should have called it.
Yeah,
say one thing.
Need actually, to get it,
I can even see it. I can even see it through the beard.
I think I'm going to have to get out of here, but I just wanted to say that we can at least all be very thankful that Coinbase finally implemented batching.
Oh my God. I saw that. I thought it was a joke. I thought it was a joke for a second. I was just like, are you serious? 2 years, 3 years later.
Good. Yeah, they're stepping up their game.
I've got to head off with Guy as well because it's literally 5 a.m. and brutal, I didn't get an early start. I'm
get some sleep.
Yeah, I've had a very entertaining couple of days. As you can see, I can barely keep so, definitely worth hanging out with you guys. So thanks for having us as always. Good to hang out.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on.
Guy, I'll see you in 15 minutes, I think.
Yep. I got a couple things to do, but we will be chatting in just a minute. All right.
Take care, guys.
Bye, guys.
See you
guys.
Good night. See ya. Okay.
And then there were five.
Five.
John, are you still in Thailand right now?
No, I'm in Guelph, Ontario, Canada right now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
My family has a pizza restaurant up here. And so I'm just up here helping out with a few things right now. Aiming to be back in Thailand in June, but you know, we'll see how everything plays out. I mean, hopefully it's just it means cheap plane tickets, because Thailand actually, I mean, reporting is obviously the big unknown in this whole thing, and emerging markets like Thailand probably under report. And I suspect that, you know, they're so heavily reliant on tourism that the government probably is intentionally under reporting. But thus far, I think they've had one death and, like, you know, under 100 cases, something like that, for a population of over 60, 70 million. So, you know,
nice.
Seems like a pretty good place to be. But it's, my girlfriend is just telling me that, like, there's nothing going on. No tourist activity. There's nobody around. So.
Is that where the monkey video came from? You see that crazy monkey video?
I think
that was Thailand, right?
Bangkok. Yeah, oh, was it Bangkok? Definitely in Thailand.
Yeah.
Definitely in Thailand. But yeah, I mean, so the story goes. I don't know about monkey sociology, but they apparently there's not, you know, tourists aren't giving them food as much as they typically do, and right. they get like these monkey gangs formed, and they fought over garbage or scraps or whatever yeah. they were fighting over.
Also because the places are empty, the squares are empty, so they're just like rushing the square to get the food.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I remember those.
Nobody's unaffected.
Yeah, it's interesting.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean the knock-on effect, I mean, so my family's in the restaurant business, and I feel like Canada's like a week, maybe 2 weeks behind the US and other places where it's kicked off a little bit earlier, but it's starting now. I mean, I was at the gym this morning, and you know, nobody's touching each other, and everyone's making jokes about toilet paper and all the rest of it. And you know, the restaurants are going to get creamed. Anything in hospitality, hotels, flights, restaurants, they're just going to get creamed, you know, because
people are going to figure out what kind of gym you go to where people usually touch each other.
High five, Corey.
Oh, okay. So there's no high fives.
We motivate each other.
Yeah, bro, it's like in those gains, right?
it's actually an Orange Theory. So when you go in, they're all like, hey, high five. Welcome
oh, really?
To class.
Got it.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
But yeah, no, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be devastating. So the thing that gives me a certain degree of hope about it is that I have a lot of friends in China, and they're reporting on the ground that things have settled down dramatically and life is returning to normal. Now, when China decides to do something, they go full blast, right? So everyone was like physically locked into their apartment buildings and, you know, quarantine, and they were spraying the streets with, you know, armies of hazmat suit guys. But it seems like there and in South Korea and Japan, things are starting to get under control as far as I know. So yeah, that's encouraging.
I think that's really interesting. I was just thinking about that in terms of response from like a very top-down authoritarian type of regime versus a very liberal regime where, like, you know, Congress has to debate, like, will we do this or will we do that? People need to gather support from the public to do anything versus like, no, you guys are staying inside. I'm going to spray the shit out of everything. Like, yeah, that's China totally different. We're never going to be able to do that in America.
Shut.
Yeah. Like, was that real? I saw videos of that. Is that confirmed on the ground at all or what?
Well, I'm sure it's real. I mean, crazy shit happens in China, no doubt. I've seen it firsthand a million times. My friends weren't like physically locked in their apartments, but I think under threat of, you know, imprisonment of some kind, they were told, like, because they were off work for 3 weeks, paid leave. They all went to Bangkok and just had fun.
Yeah.
And then they came back and they were quarantined for 2 weeks and they couldn't leave their apartment. No ifs, ands, or buts, nothing.
And I have two American friends that were in China. One's still there in Shanghai now, and another one was in one of the Hubei, not Wuhan, but one of the other cities that went through the hardcore quarantine. And I think the most egregious misinterpretation in the Western media of what was going on was that all those walls were going up outside apartment buildings, but only so that they could restrict it to one entrance.
Right. Well, of course, you know, these little snapshot videos, everyone's going to go crazy on Twitter about them and stuff. But
yeah,
but you know, they go hard, you know, when China decides to get something under control.
They sure do.
Yeah.
You know? They go hard. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, it's coming, you know, we spread all over Twitter and social media, a lot of videos put out by, you know, people in Taiwan and Hong Kong and, you know, that are very anti-China or Miles Guo stuff and things like that. And now, you know, China's having a field day doing the same thing back to us.
Yeah.
You know, they've got the Chinese health minister saying that the U.S. military brought the virus to China and unleashed it there.
My Chinese friend was saying that in our little WeChat group the other day. Now, I don't think she was really serious, but we always give her a hard time for China. And she's mainland Chinese, but very Western. And, you know, she was making the case that that's what had happened. Which none of us were buying.
Who even knows, man?
True.
Who even knows?
Yeah.
It's hard to know what to believe anymore these days. There's so much, the access to anybody being a source of truth on Twitter now, it's like absurd, right?
Yep. You're absolutely right.
I think we five can probably agree that if China did it on purpose, that was stupid. And if the US did it on purpose, that was stupid.
That was stupid.
I suspect, and I think you would have to be like really smart to pull it off. So the chances of them also being stupid enough to do it, given that they were smart enough to pull it off, makes me just think that ship came from a bat.
If there's someone that might be the right combination of stupid and smart, it could be Putin.
So it's true. So interestingly, Russia is, you know, and some other countries have done this as well, but they're threatening jail time if you don't self-quarantine yourself. And so, of course, Russia has no coronavirus, just like Russia has no gay people, which is like a problem because they make things illegal and nobody self-reports. So that's like a big deal, a big problem with regimes like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't know what the reality on the ground is at all.
Well, I don't know if you've seen on Twitter, but the reason that, you know, there's no coronavirus in Turkey is because they wash their hands more than everybody else. There and also because they have this special cologne that they put on that wards it off. So we're good over Turkey. No problem.
Meanwhile, in Iran, they're digging mass graves, supposedly, according to WashPo, if we were to believe that.
Looks pretty credible.
Looks pretty, doesn't look
unfortunately.
Good.
On a brighter note, let's not end this on coronavirus. What else can we talk about? What are you guys excited about over the next rest of this year for Bitcoin?
Somebody else go first.
So many things. I don't know. I'm actually a software developer, and I want to go back into developing for Bitcoin and Lightning. So my excursion into writing was really just an excursion. And
congrats on the book, by the way, man. I haven't spoken to you since it came out, and it seems to be doing great.
Great book.
My copy's in Newfoundland waiting for me.
As far as I'm concerned, it's just a really long Twitter thread anyway, but so many people ask me to put it into a book, so I obliged, and everything is still online. So if you haven't seen the book, just read the blog.
But I had to buy the book. I love it. It looks great on the shelf.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it just came out in German as well, because I had actually two people translate it to German as well. It was translated in a couple of languages. You know, that's the benefit of releasing it on the permissive license. So it's released on the Creative Commons license, and everyone can do whatever you want with it. And anyway, I'm really bullish on Bitcoin technology in general. Like small things, you know. I'm blown away by Mynode, for example, and I've played around with Mynode and now with mobile mixing. And I set up my second dojo actually. Like I was running a dojo instance since it came out, and now it was integrated in Mynode, and it's really easy to set up. Like it's easy if you know you're like. I mean, it's not easy, like mom and dad can do it. But if you're interested in this stuff and you know a thing or two about computers, then it's actually really easy to set up. And mixing is now mobile, and I'm really bullish on all kinds of developments. Like on the Lightning side, there is so much stuff going on. It's really hard to not be bullish, even if no coronavirus would exist and the financial system would be stable, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Nice. Seems like you should have a conversation with Carvalho, see what he's up to. He's definitely looking for awesome Bitcoin engineers.
I will.
Mm-hmm. My answer is super boring, but I guess with the greater the chaos that's circling around us, the more excited I get just by the fact that Bitcoin exists and continues to do what it always has done, and there's no indications that will stop. And so I know it's a super boring answer, and I'm super interested in all the developments that are happening in the space, the companies, the tech itself, all, you know, Lightning, all that stuff. But, you know, I'm just meat and potatoes, like, this thing is still here, and there's no reason for us to, you know, doubt it. In fact, the, you know, conviction and confidence in it continues to grow with each passing day, and can't control the exterior environment, can't control the chaos. We expect a lot of the chaos. That's why we're in this space in the first place. And it's a tumultuous journey, and you've got to be ready for that, but just roughly every 10 minutes, you know, TikTok next block. Every day that goes on, I'm more excited by it.
Yeah, I love I actually liked what happened yesterday with the flash crash, because When we came down last year, you know, from the massive hype, the hype bubble that kind of like trickled down and then we pumped to 12K, nobody noticed. None of my, you know, semi-Bitcoin interested friends even knew that happened. Then it went down to 3.5, nobody noticed, right? So it was all happening kind of quietly. Mm-hmm. And then it went from 3.5 to 10, almost nobody noticed. So it's very, you know, at 10, people started to, you know, perk up again, which was the second time, you know, we got in there. And it's all of that happened quietly. And now that we have this real, you know, flash crash, and now it's going to be in all the media, Bitcoin's dead, you know, it's going to zero. It's interesting to see the reaction from both sides, right? On one side, you have the Bitcoin dead people. On the other side, everybody in my Twitter feed was buying yesterday. You know, everybody.
Yep.
Like, I can't find a single person that wasn't buying. So it's interesting that that is happening and that the price has bounced back. Now, I'm not going to miss the last bounce. We could have cat for another year long. Who knows? But the fact that this happened and created a major media event, I think, is very interesting because that means the next time Bitcoin does go higher, whether it be 10 or 20 or whatever, you know, next milestone is, people will remember that it had quote unquote died. And then they will become very interested in why it hadn't actually died. So I think it's important to have these events so that people have memory of them.
Yeah, we touched on this a little bit earlier, Jan. I don't know if you were here, but it's such an odd response because we had this massive bloodbath in the market, right? And I got hit up. A couple of friends were the snarky, you know, how's your store value doing sort of thing.
Yep.
But more than ever, I got, you know, a number of messages from people that have never really expressed interest in this. I might have laid the spiel on them once or twice, right? But they've never really been receptive. And I got messages saying, like, how can I get involved in this? How can I get some? And I'm thinking, like, wouldn't this be the time where normies are like, you know, this is way too, you know, dangerous or volatile for me? Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, this time the response was different and they were all just like, is now a good time? So it makes me think it was running in the back of the mind. You know, this thing has quote unquote died and come back to life several times. So every time that happens, the likelihood of it really dying is less and less. And I guess they were just thinking, I don't know what they were thinking. I mean, maybe they're more mature than me because they're like, oh, this is the opportunity. This is the time.
Yeah, I had the same. It's interesting. I had a few people reach out who had been, you know, I had been talking about Bitcoin, obviously, for years in my group of friends, and there were people who were hesitant to buy for a long time. And, you know, I noted, hey, it's on sale big time, four grand, whatever it was yesterday, four or five. And I said, look, this is a massive crash, you know, and people were interested in it. And people were like, okay, how do I buy? A few people had bought, you know, in the past couple of weeks as the price was already relatively low. But definitely more people started thinking of it as a sale. And I think that has to do with the overall market.
It's the overall market for sure.
Because they're seeing like, okay, this is a massive crash, but wait a minute, Bitcoin's like, yes, it crashed, but it's also behaving very differently because it just went up 50% off of the bottom of that crash.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly a crash per se, is it? Not in the same way as, you know, the market overall is doing.
And it's also because the narrative from the last, you know, 10 years is that it is a hedge to when markets crash. And so you're going to look to it. They may not have been watching the Bitcoin price over the last few months, but then stock market crashes. And then in the back of their head, they're like, oh, there was that Bitcoin thing, which is like what I was supposed to do when the market crashes. And then they come over and take a look at it.
Yes.
So I think that's the reaction of the people outside the space. The reaction of the people inside the space was, as you guys noted, like so encouraging. And, you know, just how quickly we kind of like just got over this. When I think of, you know, the despair that I felt when the 6K barrier finally broke and went down and crashed down, and just how like world ending that felt in late, what was that, late 2018, versus like, you know, this was just like, Bitcoin gonna do what Bitcoin gonna do, like whatever. Like, you know, we had the biggest gaining day since 2011 a few months ago with the SHE pump. Like, we probably did deserve the biggest, you know, one day drop since 2013. You know,
we were overdue.
Was in the cards.
We were overdue. I mean, it pumped like 300% over a year, and that's why like nobody in the media will report Bitcoin flash crash. Dude, it's been on a massive bull run for a year. Like, are you kidding me? 300% up. So of course, we just needed a trigger.
But Corey, as you're saying that, I'm just thinking to myself, like, God, I love the people in this space, because look. Even, we're obviously deep in the weeds here, but to see your net worth, a lot of people have a big portion of their net worth wrapped up in this stuff, and to see it go down by 30, 40, 50% in a night and just be like, meh, we're good. You know, like I'm still here. I ain't going nowhere. I'm like, man, that's a unique mindset, and I love it.
Well, how many BTC are in one BTC?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Always one. Yeah, it's funny because holding Bitcoin is like I've never traded the stock market before. I've always been a buy and hold guy. But up leading into this crash, I've been really studying a lot of macro. I've been listening to almost more macro voices than Bitcoin pods. And I apologize to all Bitcoin podcasters present. I love your shows. But I've gotten so kind of red-pilled on like, you know, just general market movements, about how bonds work and stuff like that. And so when the, you know, I started betting on Deutsche Bank imploding like a month ago, 2 months ago. And I bought some puts on Deutsche Bank, and it moved against me in a massive way. It just like went up like crazy. And so my puts were 99%. They basically went to zero, and I held, and I was like, fuck it. You know what? Fuck it. I believe it. I believe it's going to go down. Fuck it. I'm going to hold through this because I have the Bitcoin mentality. I'm convicted in what I believe. I believe the banking system is going to implode, and I'm going to hold on to these puts. And I held through them, and they're all, I mean, they're in the green now, and they're getting more green, I think. We'll see how this plays out. It could still move against me.
Guys, but I got to sign off, unfortunately.
Yeah,
got to go join this Adam Meister's show right now with Guy and BTC Sessions. So we're going to
luck, man.
We're going to yell a lot. Should be fun. All
right. Fun. Guys, see you, Corey.
Awesome
see you,
chatting Corey. With you. Bye.
But yeah, I was just going to say that the moral of the story is, I think when you hold Bitcoin and you get used to that volatility and you get used to believing in yourself rather than being led by what the, you know, everybody else around you is doing, because that's the market, right? The market is the number that represents everybody else's sentiment. And if everybody else is selling Bitcoin and it's going down by 50%, and you still understand the long-term value and the value proposition of Bitcoin as a freedom money, as a censorship-resistant store of value, like, you're buying, right? There's nothing has changed.
That's such a good point, right? Because I think the reason why a lot of us get emotional with these market things is because there's nothing more truthful than a market, right? It's this emergent collective behavior. And so when it's tanking, it's kind of reality saying, hey, you're on the wrong side of, you're not in reality. Reality is different to you. And to be able to have the conviction and the emotional stability and everything else to say, no, I know what's going on here more than what quote unquote reality is telling me. And to hold true to that is really tough to develop. But once you get there, it's such a zen sort of peaceful sort of place. And you won't always be right. You know, that's not what I'm trying to articulate, but it's definitely something that being in this space teaches you. And that's why, you know, I put out a tweet earlier today where being in Bitcoin is kind of like a rite of passage, right? You either succumb to that emotional roller coaster and you end up just converting back to kind of a herd mentality, or you make it through the challenges of that and you come out the other side transformed, where you're more confident in your ability to assess and to develop your own perspective and have confidence in it, and then the intellect and the emotional stability to know how to manage it ongoing. That's such a gift of being in this space.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned Bitcoins then, and I achieved this once I switched to Alt, the DCA, which is quite a while ago, thanks to Bitter now. And I think...
Nice. Shout out to Ruben.
Shout out to Ruben. And I think, to shake my faith in Bitcoin, everything I know about physics and mathematics has to be wrong. You know, like a full-on global meltdown of the markets and the coronavirus isn't enough. You know, like Bitcoin will survive that, no problem. If something in the cryptography is broken, or if we actually find out that our mathematical assumptions are wrong, then that's a very different story. But what's currently going on, like, it doesn't faze me at all. Bitcoin is still Bitcoin. It's still producing blocks. Like, nothing happened in cyberspace. Like, nothing at all. It's still smooth sailing for Bitcoin. And there is a very, very nice silver lining to the whole crypto crash and to the whole global market meltdown that's going on right now. I think 99.9% of all the shitcoins won't survive this. Like, they're done for. And you even see it in ETH with all their, you know, fancy double and triple collateralized loans and what, like, they're rebuilding the same fancy system of...
Yeah, MakerDAO is on the verge of pulling
exactly,
the plug.
Exactly, exactly.
Something like that,
and,
yeah.
And you see it with so many other shitcoins as well. And I think that's a... a good thing to see as well, that the Bitcoin narrative was right. You know, like go for the sound money, go for the deep stability, build a stable system, go for robustness, go for maximum decentralization so that you can actually survive a global catastrophe like this. And I think we're fine. You know, like Bitcoin is fine. I would be way more worried if something would have happened in cyberspace. But the current storm that's happening is mostly in FinSpace. And yes, there is a virus in MeatSpace as well. But that doesn't affect Bitcoin too much, you know. Like it's not a war where undersea cables are cut or something like that.
Right.
It's a global pandemic. The internet will be fine, and the networks will be fine, and the miners will be fine. And I think in terms of value, Bitcoin will recover surprisingly quickly. I'm quite convinced of that.
I think
Breach,
so
too. Baby.
Yeah. Breach. I mean, as we get into the next, you know, financial cycle, I don't know how long it takes to recover from this, but people are going to start to remember what happened and all the sort of, you know, lies they were told, like S&P only goes up, so don't worry, just buy that, there's no volatility, always bet on low volatility story, and how, you know, badly they were lied to. And they're going to start to say, okay, well, what is exists outside of the system? And they're going to start to remember Bitcoin.
Yeah,
it might take people time to come around to that, because just they're going to be scarred financially from what just happened. But, you know, 100%. They're going to come around.
Gents, I got to take off. It's always such a pleasure to speak with you guys. Hopefully we can reconnect again sometime
soon.
Yeah,
let's do this again.
Until that time, be well.
Take care.
See you, boys. Man.
Yeah, I was just going to say the very last thing. Also, keep in mind, you know, it's not only retail investors now. Like a lot of people that have been in finance for a very long time are taking note now. And I think, for example, Andy Atstrom's book, Why Buy Bitcoin, you know, it's one of the first steps now that wealth managers and also institutional investors are taking notice. And I think with the next cycle, we will see a lot more money flowing in, because it won't be just individuals that are eyeing Bitcoin. I think bigger moves will be happening, because I think when all of this kind of blows over and stabilizes, if it does in the next couple of months, we will see in hindsight that Bitcoin is uncorrelated to the rest of the financial markets. It would surprise me so insanely much if Bitcoin would actually stay correlated in the next like 6 to 12 months. I'm quite convinced that it won't be. You know, like, I mean, this downturn was just a flight to liquidity. People kind of need to buy toilet paper and cans of food.
And maybe it even wasn't, because if you think about like how much Bitcoin is actually, the majority of the Bitcoin is hoarded, as people are just sitting on a cold storage. So there's very little float. And when this kind of event happens, it's very easy for somebody with a lot of money to push the price around. So I actually suspect there's a lot of things that could be happening. It could just be whales. It could be miners that are bigger miners trying to push out. You know, if they push the price low enough, we'll get capitulation out of the inefficient miners, and that lets the bigger miners take more real estate in the next, in the next run when the halving happens, because they're all worried about that too. So I could definitely see people with significant means using this catastrophe to basically regain real estate that they need, you know, to be profitable in the long run. That could be happening.
Yeah. I was so proud of my wife last night. I was telling her about, I was like, Bitcoin went under $4,000. And she was like, wasn't it like $10,000 like a few weeks ago or something? Last time I told her about the price. And I was like, yeah. And she goes, wow. Well, how can we scrape together some money to buy more? And I'm like,
nice.
Yes. She's got that hodler mentality. So
my wife's the same. Yeah. She's like, are we buying some? What's going on?
Yeah. It's time to buy.
Let's do it.
And she just kind of instinctively gets that, you know, buy when there's blood in the streets mentality. It's awesome. She has no compunction, like no pause. Like, let's buy more.
Let's see how all of this plays out. I mean, it will be, I think Hans is right in those terms, that it will be painful for most, very painful for some. And I think we haven't, it only has started right now. Like the worst is yet to come. And I'm not worried about Bitcoin at all. Like it almost doesn't matter how low the price goes, but it will be interesting to see how the second and third order effects play out, both in regular systems like supply chains and also in the financial world.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the more important thing happening in the world right now, and that's going to take significant time to recover from. And I don't expect really major inflows into Bitcoin until that does shake out. I could be wrong, but I'm always trying to be pessimistic so that I don't set my hopes too high and just say, look, I think it's going to 100K easily. Maybe it'll take 10 years. Maybe it'll take 1 year. I don't know, but I'm gonna bet on 10 years and hope on, you know, hope for the 1 year. But there's no, you know, we're building what we're building no matter what, right? We're all in this space because we believe Bitcoin needs to exist, and it needs to be robust, and it needs to be have good user experience and good education, and these things need to exist to bring on the next wave of people. And you know, you mentioned institutions, for example, and I agree they will be coming on board, but a lot of the reasons why they're not is because the infrastructure isn't there. They're not necessarily, I mean, there are good custody companies coming up now, but institutions, they want fidelity. They want a brand name that has that feature that they can trust, that's been out for a while. You know, they're not just going to do that on day one. So it's going to just, it's a Lindy thing. It's going to take time for these things to feel like they're comfortable and normal and trustworthy. So I think we just have to wait.
Yeah, I agree.
Long-term thinking, strong hands.
Strong hands.
Channel Adam Meister. All right, guys, this was a lot of fun. We went for almost an hour and a half, over an hour and a half. That was fun.
Nice. Still have 11 viewers. People are watching.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll push this out.
Shout out to the viewers.
Yeah, I never count the live viewers because I'm also one of those guys. If I have the option to 2x through a mod, I will do it. I won't watch
it. Yeah, I'm sure there will be a lot of people watching after the fact. So thank you guys for tuning in. This was a lot of fun.
Swan signal out.
Yeah. Peace.
Take care, everyone.
All right, guys. I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. I had a lot of fun with all those guys, and that was a hell of a crew to get together all at once. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. A huge thank you to Swan Signal. It looks like they're going to be producing a lot of stuff. They've had a couple another other really great pieces on their blog. And we may be covering them on the show. I don't know. I haven't worked them into the lineup yet, but there's some really great reads over there if you haven't. So if you haven't checked it out, I'll have the link in the show notes so you can go exploring and reading. So with that, another big thank you to Swan Bitcoin for sponsoring this show. And do not forget, this is a perfect example of the craziness in these markets of why you should DCA. Set it and forget it. Just buy your Bitcoin regularly, put it in your savings, make it a long-term thing. Swan Bitcoin is the easiest way to do that. They're coming right around the corner. It's going to be the 25th of March for the US and then other territories shortly thereafter. And I'm so excited to use them. So highly, highly recommended. And a huge thank you to those guys for supporting the crypto economy. All right. Till next time, guys. Don't forget to check out the website, thecryptoeconomy.com. We have the entire library of stuff. Apparently, I've reached the max on my RSS feed. I'm not seeing anything before episode 100 now. So I'll work on that. But right now, it is all available on the website. So if you want to dig through the hundreds of other pieces we have read on this show, that is where you find it, thecryptoeconomy.com. Have a great weekend, everybody. And until next time, take it easy, guys.